Geneva and Emmy prepared a hasty meal for the men and the boy. Geneva thought it odd that Tadlock and Harp took theirs out to the narrow porch and ate with the Indian. They talked in low tones that didn't carry back inside. Their conspiratorial manner made Geneva uneasy. Emmy gathered the food that remained in the cabin. She put it into a cloth sack.
Good idea. We won't be passing any stores for a while.
Tadlock and Harp came back inside, the Indian moving up beside them. All three held pistols aimed at Donley.
We ain't all going. Us three are, and that woman of yours. But you're staying here.
Donley's face flushed. Instinctively, he started to reach for the pistol on his hip, but stayed his hand. Three muzzles were pointed at his stomach.
I always knew it, Curly. You're a damn thief.
I learned from a good one.
Tadlock nodded at Geneva.
Get over here, woman. I'm taking you along.
Donley grabbed her arm and pulled her up against him.
Like hell you are.
I'm sorry it's worked out like this, but I don't want to keep looking back, wondering when you're coming after me.
Donley staggered. He bent forward from the waist, then fell on his face. Geneva dropped to her knees beside him. Before the shot's echo died, the panicked boy bolted out the door and ran for the corral.
Go after him, Chief. Don't let him get away.
The Indian hurried outside. Tadlock grabbed Geneva's wrist and roughly pulled her to her feet.
Donley's dead. You don't have to hold yourself back for him anymore. You're going with me.
Geneva tried to reach Donley's pistol. Tadlock jerked her away from it.
Come on. I ain't got time to fool around.
He threw an arm around her waist and drew her toward the door.
I tried being nice to you and got nothing. Like it or not, you're mine now. Harp, pick up the grub sack.
Emmy followed Harp out the door.
You turned Geneva loose!
Quincy, do something about that crazy woman before she hurts somebody.
Harp swung the food sack and knocked Emmy down. He picked up the pistol she dropped and shoved it into his waistband.
Just for that, you're staying here.
The kid was on his horse and out of the corral in a run, leaving the gate open. The Indian ran to close it before the penned horses could escape. Chief took one futile shot in the boy's direction.
Damn Tonk never could shoot straight.
The boy was quickly gone, lost from sight amid a scattering of oak timber.
You want me get him?
You couldn't catch him now. Let's saddle our horses.
In the corral, Harp led a horse up for Geneva.
I put Emmy's side saddle on him. She ain't going with us. I wished you wasn't either.
So do I.
Harp gave her a boost into the saddle. She weighed her chances of doing what the boy had done. Perhaps when they were out of the corral.
Open the gate, Chief.
Tadlock circled the horses and started them toward the opening. Geneva moved in among them. When she was clear of the gate, she put her horse into a run northward in the direction the boy had taken. The wind whipped her face and tugged at her hair. She felt a momentary exhilaration as it seemed she had broken free. But she heard a horse rapidly coming up behind her. Tadlock cut in front and grabbed her reins. He jerked them out of her hand and wrapped the ends around the horn of his saddle. He brought both horses to such an abrupt stop that Geneva was hurled to the ground. She felt a sharp pain in her shoulder as she rolled. He dismounted and pulled her to her feet. Geneva doubled her fists and beat against his face and chest. He slapped her so hard that her head snapped back. She thought for a moment he had broken her jaw.
You just as well make up your mind right now. You'll do what I say and go where I tell you. I'm not putting up with any more nonsense.
He boosted her onto her horse, then cut two long leather strings from his saddle and bound her hands. He tied them to the horn over which her right leg was bent. Leading her horse, he cut across country and caught up to the fast-moving westbound remuda.
If it had been me, I'd given her the back of my hand and left her on foot.
Like you did, Emmy?
You've got to keep women in their place, or they'll take over the world.
Yeah, I saw how well you kept Emmy in her place. She had the engine sign on you from the start.
It don't bother me one bit to leave her behind. There's always better one down the road.
Moving in a long trot, Tadlock holding her reins, Geneva had time finally to think about Donley, lying face down on the floor. She wished she could cry for him, but she didn't want Tadlock to see her tears. She wanted him to see only strength and defiance. She thought, too, of Emmy, left by herself with not even a horse to carry her away from that awful place. She had to concentrate on staying in the saddle. She felt awkward and out of balance with her hands tied to the horn. The chief rode near the lead horses. Suddenly he turned in the saddle. He pointed.
Riders, come!
Geneva looked back. Behind them, a quarter mile or less, came a cluster of horsemen moving in a lope. She felt a sudden exhilaration. This must be the posse Donnelly had dreaded. Perhaps they would set her free.
Hanging party, sure as hell.
He seemed torn for a moment, looking toward the driven horses in front of him, then back to the pursuit rapidly coming up behind him. Indecision did not delay him long.
Let the horses go! Every man for himself! Hiya! Hiya!
He spurred savagely, forcing Geneva's horse to keep up. The terrain was hilly and rough. The horses had to dodge their way among the oaks and scrub brush. Geneva feared she would lose her seat and be dragged, trampled beneath the hooves. The chief stiffened, then slipped out of the saddle. He lay crumpled, not moving. His horse galloped on to join the others, the stirrups flopping.
They got chief!
Tadlock urged his horse and Geneva's to more speed. She tried to work her hands free so she could jump off, but the bonds were too tight.
I know what you're thinking. You just break both legs, and maybe your head.
Harp's horse suddenly went down. Legs flailing, it pitched its rider out into the grass. He rolled, then was on his feet.
Carly, help me! Help me!
Tadlock kept riding.
Pick me up! For God's sake, pick me up!
Tadlock ignored him. He spurred toward an oak thicket that stretched for several hundred yards. Geneva managed a quick glance back. She saw Harp raise his hands as the posse surrounded him. She couldn't hear him, but she imagined he was pleading for his life.
Maybe they'll waste a few minutes with Quincy and give us a longer lead.
He's your partner. Don't you care what happens to him?
I care about what happens to me. Quincy never toted his weight in the first place.
He plunged into the thicket. Geneva had to duck her head and bend low to keep heavy limbs from dragging her out of the saddle. Lighter ones cracked and splintered under impact. They pulled her hair, tore at her dress, and deep scratched her skin. Pain made her want to cry out, but she wouldn't allow herself to show weakness to Tadlock. They had ridden several miles, much of it through thickets that slowed them to a walk but hid them from sight. Finally, Tadlock stopped.
Gotta let the horses rest. Looks like we shook loose.
Tadlock dismounted and walked over and untied her hands.
Get down if you wanna. Just don't get no ideas.
Geneva hurt all over. She bled in a dozen places where rough limbs had cut into her skin. Her dress was torn, leaving one shoulder bare and badly scratched. She slipped from the saddle and felt her legs give way as her feet touched the ground. She went to her hands and knees. She felt dizzy and for a bit was unable to gain her feet. Tadlock didn't help her up.
We left the trail. If they got a good tracker, they'll be coming on.
I don't know if I can go any farther.
Oh, you got a lot of traveling left in you yet.
Do you have any idea where you're going?
Someplace where it'll be just me and you. You've been with the wrong man up to now, but I'm twice the man Donnelly Bannister ever was. I'll make you forget you ever knew him.
One thing I'll never forget is the way you shot him down in cold blood.
He'd have done the same to me, soon as we didn't need one another anymore. I just did it to him first.
Like you tried to do to that black man and to the kid.
Yeah, odd about that darky. Like he knew what we had in mind for him. I always wondered if somebody warned him.
He frowned at her.
You, maybe?
Pride made her straighten her shoulders.
Yes, I did it, and I'm glad.
He nodded towards their back trail.
I wouldn't be surprised none if he led that posse here. If so, it's your doing.
I just wish they had gotten here sooner, before you shot Donnelly.
He'd likely be dead by now anyway. They'd have hung him. Me and Quincy in the engine, too. This way he died quick. He didn't have time to think about it.
Geneva made up her mind that if the chance came, she wouldn't give Tadlock time to think about it either. He pointed his thumb toward the horse.
Climb on. It's time we got moving again. They ain't made a rope yet that fits my neck.
Andy slowed but didn't stop when the posse caught up to Harp. He put his horse into a full run again. He saw that one of the two remaining riders was a woman. She had to be Geneva Bannister. He also saw that her hands were tied to the saddle. The other rider was leading her horse. He tried to level his rifle, but the muzzle danced crazily as the horse cut to one side and then the other, avoiding the scrub brush. Firing from a running horse would waste ammunition. Worse, he might hit the woman by accident. The pair disappeared into a dense thicket. Andy was tempted to plunge in after them, but Tadlock could hide in the timber and set up an ambush. Andy slowed to a trot. Vanderpool and Hamlin pulled up beside him.
Yeah, I hate to leave him unhung, but he could be drawing a bead on one of us right now.
I don't like leaving that woman in his hands.
No, she's a horse thief's wife. I doubt he can do anything to her that hadn't been done before.
Everybody told me she's a lady.
If so, she shows poor judgment in the company she keeps. We've got our horses back. We've killed one thief and caught another. The boys and I are going home.
Vanderpool nodded toward the sergeant.
What about him?
Well, he's my prisoner. So was Donnelly Bannister.
I must say, I find it hard to believe Bannister's watch stopped that bullet. With luck like that, getting Bannister to justice may be harder than it seems at the moment. In any event, Hamlin and Bannister are no longer of concern to me. You can have both of them, so long as you take them far away from here.
That I'll do.
We'll stop at the cabin and get something to eat before we go on. You're welcome to join us.
Andy looked toward the thicket.
What do you think, Joshua? You game to go in there?
I owe that lady.
Nerves tingling, Andy entered the thicket where he saw the two horses go. Though he searched diligently, he could find no tracks, no clear sign of their passage. The fugitives had broken off small tree limbs in their passage, but he realized that many more had been broken by wind and last winter's ice. He couldn't distinguish one cause from another.
Yeah, we'll never trail them through this mess. Not unless you're a better tracker than I am.
What we need is an Indian, but he's laying out yonder dead.
And he knew further search would be futile.
Just as well turn back. Maybe Bannister will have some idea where they might be going.
Approaching the cabin, Andy saw that the recovered horses had been placed in a corral. The posse's mounts were tied to the fence. Andy dismounted and tied his horse outside the cabin. Inside, he found Emmy cooking at the iron stove. The captured man, name of Quincy Harp, he was told, sat on the floor against one wall. His expression was bleak, his eyes downcast.
From now on, the thieves will know they can find no safety in our part of the country. We've broken them for good.
Andy doubted that. He suspected that the ranchers would continue facing the same problems, only the culprits' faces would be different. Bannister's anxious eyes focused on Andy.
You didn't find her?
No.
Couldn't you follow the tracks?
We didn't find any.
I could have. Oh, I wish I'd been with you.
You're a tracker?
Damn right. How do you think I managed to find so many horses?
Do you have any idea where Tadlock might be headed?
I know a half a dozen places he might try for. If I could get a line in his direction, I'd have a better notion of where to look for him.
Do you think you're able to ride?
To get my woman away from that snake before it's too late, you bet I can ride.
Just don't forget that you're under arrest. If you try to escape, I'll have no choice but to shoot you.
I'll stick to you like a cocklebur till we find Curly and my woman. After that, we'll see.
Andy looked at the sergeant.
And you, Joshua?
Like I told you, I owe the lady.
The meal used up most of the food from the bag Harp dropped when his horse was shot from under him.
I can't stay here by myself without any grub. The cabin is fixing to fall down anyhow.
You're a good scout, Emmy. You can take my woman's buggy and her horse.
Bannister glanced up at Andy.
Unless you're arresting Emmy, too.
She's not in my fugitive book. She's free to go wherever she wants to.
Thanks, Ranger.
She looked gravely at Harp, hunched in fear against the wall.
I guess you know that posse won't let him get to town alive.
Andy knew she was probably right. These men were in a mood for revenge against horse thieves. He was fortunate to keep Bannister from their grasp.
He knew what the chances were when he chose this business.
He's a weakling and a coward, but he is a man. Somebody ought to cry over him. I reckon I'm the only one that will.
Finished eating, the posse men hitched Geneva's horse to the buggy for Emmy and gave her the little food that remained. They put Harp on one of the recovered horses, bareback. A posse man hinted that he wouldn't have to travel that way for long. Emmy stood beside Harp, tears on her cheeks. She clung to his hand until the posse took him and moved out, driving the rest of the recovered horses, except one left for Bannister to ride. Bannister helped Emmy into the buggy. He kissed her hand.
You got a good heart, Emmy. Give it to a man that deserves it.
If I ever find one.
Emmy flipped the reins, and the horse and buggy moved away. Bannister climbed painfully into the saddle. His face was pinched from the effort.
All right, Ranger, show me where you lost that trail.
You don't look fit to ride.
I'm a long ways from dead yet.
The three rode out, Andy's pack mule following. Andy showed Bannister where he lost the fleeing Tadlock. Walking his horse back and forth in a zigzag pattern, Bannister managed after a time to find the tracks.
At this point, Curly's just trying to get away. He hadn't settled on a direction. We'll have to follow the tracks for a while before we can figure out which way he means to go.
Andy glanced at the sun, by this time low in the west.
The day's getting short. That'll be on us before long.
I expect my woman's thinking about that, too.
Did you say something?
No, just cussing myself for all the times I could have shot him and didn't. My woman told me she thought a junction jury would turn me loose.
That's the way everybody was talking. They were saying you acted in self-defense, and the community was better off with one less Slocum to worry about.
I suppose now you'll charge me for horse stealing.
The junction is a long way from here. Maybe if you come clear on the murder charge, you'll forget about the horses.
Bannister pressed his hand against the bandaged wound.
Damn horses didn't come cheap. Cost me a bad bellyache and a perfectly good pocket watch.
If it hadn't been for that watch, the slug might have gone through your gut.
It looks like those horses might have cost me my woman, too.
It seemed peculiar to Andy that Bannister was not calling his wife by her name. He kept referring to her as my woman, as if she were a piece of property, like a horse.
I can tell that you're hurting. I don't think you can ride much more till you've rested.
I couldn't rest. Thinking of him having her, doing what he wants to her. Damn it! I had Emmy write and tell her not to come up here in the first place.
The statement surprised Andy.
When she got the letter, I took it for granted that you wanted her to join up with you. I counted on her leading me to you.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't find me sooner. Curly might have an extra hole in him now instead of me.
Bannister bent forward, pressing his hand against the bandage.
Anytime you want to stop.
Not as long as there's light enough to see by.
Bannister lost the tracks twice. Andy wondered if he could find them again. He did, but only after losing time.
At first, Curly was just running. Now he's taking pains to make himself hard to follow.
Do you have any idea where he's headed?
No, not yet. But he can't go far enough to get away from me. I could have overlooked him taking all the horses. I might even forgive him for shooting me in the belly. But then he stole my woman. By the time he gets done with her, she'd be better off dead.
The tone of Bannister's voice troubled Andy. He heard no affection in it, only a strident possessiveness. Andy couldn't conceive of feeling that way toward Bethel.
She was kind to me when I was hungry. And she gave me warning that Mr. Curly figured to kill me when the work was over with.
Andy noticed that Joshua deferentially used the term Mr., even in speaking of a man who had planned his murder. For himself, he would have used some of Bannister's more pungent terminology.
We'll get her back.
After Curly's finished with her, she won't be the same.
Eventually, it became clear that the tracks were leading westward. Bannister leaned forward in the saddle and pointed.
Now I got a notion where he's going. A worn-out reprobate named Wilkes is living in an old buffalo hunter camp. He was of help to me sometimes in the horse business.
How far to his place?
Bannister's head creased with frustration.
Too far. There ain't no way we can get there before night.
Dark shouldn't stop us if you know where it is.
Bannister clenched a fist.
It's a dugout. We could pass right by it and not see it.
Maybe it won't be like you think.
It will. I know, Curly. I'll kill him if it takes the rest of my life to run him down.
Bannister's mood became increasingly desperate as the sun dropped behind low-lying clouds that indicated rain somewhere to the west. At full dark, he conceded that traveling farther would be useless. Bannister was slow and easy in climbing down from the horse. He turned his face away to hide the pain, physical and emotional.
Curly's got her at Wilkes's place by now.
What kind of a man is Wilkes? Maybe he'll take up for her.
He couldn't stand up against Curly. Even if he tried, it'd be because a nasty old fart wanted her himself.
We'll catch up to them tomorrow.
Tomorrow will be too late. Would have been better if he'd killed her instead of dragging her away with him.
The bleak tone of Bannister's voice increased Andy's uneasiness.
I can't imagine wishing Bethel was dead, no matter what somebody did.
You can't imagine it. Because you ain't been there. I have.
As the three men prepared to bed down, Bannister poked at the little fire they started for coffee.
I never told her, but she wasn't my first wife. The other one, she was a pretty little thing. Made me think of pink roses. She'd never been off the farm before. Slick lawyer come along, whispering pretty words in her ear. Talked her into running off with him. After a while, she came back, carrying his baby and begging forgiveness. I tried, God knows, but every time I touched her, I'd think about her laying with him. I wanted to strangle her. When she died birthing that baby, it was the best thing for both of us. Otherwise, there's no telling what I might have done.
Bannister's words were chilling.
But that one left of her own choosing. This one was taken by force.
In the long run, it all comes out the same. I don't know if I could look her in the face again.
As Andy lay down on his blanket, Joshua leaned close.
I got a cold feeling. I'm afraid Mr. Bannister may do something awful when we find her.
The same thought had begun to haunt Andy.
It'll be up to us to keep that from happening.
The soldier brooded, staring into the flickering coals as the campfire burned down. Andy sensed the man was thinking ahead to what awaited him upon his return south. A legal hanging was probably the best he could hope for. A lynching was more likely. That thought and concern for Geneva Bannister left Andy sleepless. He sat up, poking wood into the fire a piece at a time to keep it going. Joshua left his blanket and sat beside him.
It sure is a dark night. I ain't been able to sleep none either.
We'll pay for it tomorrow.
I always slept good of a night when I was a soldier. I always felt like the army would see to it that I had something to eat and a place to lay my head.
How'd you come to join up?
I was still a growing boy when emancipation come. I got awful tired of dragging a cotton sack. I sure didn't want to be doing it the rest of my life. A recruiter come along, gave me a bunch of talk. Said all I had to do was put my ex on a piece of paper and I'd be a soldier. I'd have plenty of money and plenty to eat. He stretched that story some, but he was right about one thing. I could make something of myself in the army. As long as I wore that uniform, I wasn't just another field hand. I was special. It ain't just everybody that gets to be a sergeant, neither. Now, I've lost all that on account of a no-good piece of white trash that needed killing. I wished somebody else had done it instead of me.
I do, too.
Now it looks like the devil's got hold of Mr. Bannister, like he's taking hold of me. He may do something he'll always be sorry for.
That's why we have to make sure he doesn't get out of our sight.
Geneva was desperately tired, and she hurt all over from the fast, rough ride. She was not accustomed to traveling on horseback. Only the fact that her hands were tied to the saddle had kept her from falling. That and the dread of being dragged.
Can't you untie me? My wrists are bleeding.
You try to run away again. That's how come I tied you in the first place.
Where would I go? I have no idea where we are. I'd have nothing to eat. What money I had was left in the cabin.
Good. Maybe now you'll do what I tell you to.
At least let me get down and stretch my limbs. They feel paralyzed.
Well, I reckon if anybody's still trailing us, they're way behind.
He moved his mount in close and untied her hands.
I'm holding on to your horse. Don't you get any notions about running.
She rubbed her wrists. They were sticky with blood and burned as if she had held them too close to a fire. It would be useless to try to get away from him now, but she would keep alert. Sooner or later, she might get her chance. Never had she seriously wished she could kill somebody. She had that thought now about Tadlock. When she first saw him, he struck her as handsome in a rough sort of way. Now she could see only the ugliness beneath. Donley Bannister's blood was on his hands. She had no doubt about Tadlock's plans for her. The thought brought revulsion.
There are certain things a woman should be allowed to do in private.
She pointed toward a clump of brush.
Go on. I need to do the same thing. But if you're tempted to try and run, forget it. I could catch you before you took 20 steps.
I know that. I'm not stupid.
Then how come you got hooked up with somebody like Donley?
Because he's a man. Was a man.
Oh, I'm a man, too. A better one than him.
Some man. You shot my husband without giving him a chance.
I'm an old poker player. I understand odds. There's times to take an honest chance, and there's times to pull one out of your sleeve. With a man like Donnelly, it's always paid to hold out an ace.
She knew Donnelly's faults. At times he drank too much, gambled too much. Now she knew he'd also been a horse thief.
But God help me, I loved him in spite of all that.
Geneva straightened her dress the best she could as she walked back to her horse. The brush had torn it in several places. It hung loosely off one bare shoulder. She wished she had a pin to fasten it in place.
Feel better?
Some.
Geneva stalled for time in no hurry to get back in the saddle. She hoped someone was catching up.
Are we going anywhere in particular, or are we just wandering around?
It's coming on night. We got nothing to eat, thanks to that damn Quincy keeping the grub sack. Besides, it looks like it might rain. I know a fellow who lives a little ways on.
Friend of yours?
I wouldn't call him a friend. Done business with him now and again, but I never let him get close to my money.
He held the leather strings that had bound her.
I won't tie you if you promise to behave yourself. I don't fancy having to chase you through the brush again.
I won't run. Not yet.
She didn't see the dugout until they were almost at its door. It had been built into a hillside. A crude rock chimney protruded from the dirt-covered roof. She smelled wood smoke. Near the dugout was a well, its circular stone wall rising 3 feet up from the ground. A little farther away, a sagging shed was topped by a tangle of brush next to a nondescript corral of scrub oak branches and trunks.
There used to be buffalo bones scattered all over these hillsides till the bone pickers gathered them up.
Born in Texas, Geneva had seen the great buffalo herds grazing free and had been told unbelievable stories about them.
It's hard to imagine all those thousands wiped out in a few short years.
Money. Some people will do anything for money.
Like steal horses. Kill a partner so you can grab his share.
It don't pay to ride up to a camp without letting them know. Some people shoot first and then ask who you are. Hello, the house!
A shaggy black dog trotted toward them. It stopped short, turning halfway around and tucking its tail as if prepared to run in the event of a threat.
Gee, a coward. A lot like the man that owns it.
The wooden door opened slightly and the muzzle of a rifle poked through.
Who's that out there?
It's Curly Tadlock! You know me!
The door swung inward. A gray-whiskered man in grimy clothes cradled a rifle in his arms, his hand on the trigger guard.
Damn right I know you. You done wore out your welcome around here.
Just a little misunderstanding, Wilkes. You gonna let this lady wait out here with night setting in?
The man lowered the rifle, squinting to see better as he walked over to the two riders.
A lady? That changes the complexion of things. Send her in while you put your horses in the pen out yonder.
Geneva didn't like this man's looks any better than she liked Tadlock's. His ragged beard had felt neither scissors nor razor in weeks, and was a stranger to a comb. He looked her up and down as if he were appraising a mare.
A fine figure of a woman. Don't you know better than to run with the likes of Curly Tadlock?
She flinched as he laid a rough palm on her dress over her thigh. He took her hand and examined the abrasions left by the leather strings that had bound her wrists.
It don't look like you come of your own free will and accord.
He killed my husband, then dragged me with him.
Appears to me like you're in something of a fix. But say the word and I'll blow his lamp out. He's overdue for a reckoning.
The longer she studied him, the more uneasy she became. She sensed that Wilkes could be as bad a bargain as Tadlock.
Badly as I hate him, I wouldn't want his blood on my hands.
Wouldn't be on your hands, it'd be on mine. They've been bloody before.
She did not doubt that. His eyes were those of a coyote. The tiny room was a boar's nest, just large enough to accommodate a small, rough fireplace, a table with one chair built from wooden crates, and an unmade bed with wide rawhide straps instead of slats. A stained canvas was stretched across the ceiling to catch dirt that might otherwise filter in from the sod-covered roof. On a grate in the fireplace, hot grease sizzled in a cast-iron skillet.
I'm frying up some venison to go with my biscuits and beans. I hope that suits your fancy, because I ain't got much else.
Venison will do.
Noting that he picked up the sliced meat with dirty hands, she didn't feel hungry.
Sad to say, it's been a long time since a woman set foot in this place. All I ever see is renegades like Curly. Not what you'd call the salt of the earth.
Do any lawmen ever come around?
Not since I've been here. I've known people to ride by within 50 yards and not see this dugout. I don't get much company unless it's on business.
She could guess what kind that was.
Curly says you've done business with him.
And generally wished I hadn't. He don't give nobody an edge. You say he killed your husband? Would I know him?
Donnelly Bannister.
Donnelly! He wouldn't be an easy man to kill. Curly must have shot him in the back.
No, but he took Donnelly unaware. He didn't give him a chance.
That's Curly's way.
Wilkes glanced toward the rifle he had set beside the door.
What would you give to be free of him?
I don't have anything to give you.
I ain't talking about money.
I don't know what you mean.
I think you do. You're a grown woman.
He gripped her bare shoulder. Geneva felt ill. To trade Tadlock for Wilkes would hardly be a gain, except that Wilkes might be easier to get away from. He was many years older and probably slower in his movements.
That's asking too much.
It ain't a lot. I may not be the man anymore that Donnelly was, but the fire ain't plumb out. I could show you a thing or two.
Geneva shrank away from him, but the room was too small for her to go far.
You keep thinking about it. Right now, why don't you finish frying up that venison and fix us a pot of coffee? I'm hungry.
The fire had burned low. A small shovel leaned against the fireplace. Geneva used it to stir the coals and coax them to a greater heat. Tadlock entered the dugout carrying his saddlebags and a blanket roll that had been tied behind the cantle of his saddle. He saw Geneva at the fireplace.
Hurry up with that supper, woman.
What you got in them saddlebags?
That's my business.
I'll bet it's all the money you've cheated out of poor folks like me.
You always had both eyes wide open. I was just faster on my feet than you were.
Tadlock fetched a tin plate from a small shelf on the wall, speared the first piece of venison with the point of a knife, and dropped it on the plate.
Pour me a cup of that coffee.
Geneva remembered the way Emmy had talked to Quincy Harp.
You're not crippled. Get it yourself.
She stumbled backward from Tadlock's slap, almost falling onto the bed.
Now get me that coffee.
Hand shaking, she poured the coffee. Her face was aflame.
I like spirit in a woman, but I wanted to always remember who the boss is. Wilkes, I never seen a time when you didn't have some whiskey around. Where's it at?
Hesitantly, Wilkes reached under the bed and brought forth a bottle. He thrust it at Tadlock.
You owe me for this. Careful you don't choke on it.
If it's like most of the stuff you got, I probably will.
He wiped his mouth on his sleeve.
Even worse than I thought.
Wilkes reached for the bottle, but Tadlock withheld it from him.
Well.
Wilkes brooded, watching his whiskey slowly disappear, swallow by swallow.
What would you take for your woman, Curly?
She ain't a mare for buying and selling. Even if she was, you wouldn't have enough money to buy her with.
Tadlock cut a quick glance at Geneva.
What would you want with her anyway? You're too old for a woman like her.
I ain't that old.
Just when you thought you had her, she'd skin you and hang your hat on the door.
I might decide to take her away from you.
Oh, big talk for a burned-out old renegade. I got a notion to boot you halfway to the Pease River.
Curly gave Geneva a long, hungry study.
Wilkes, this bed ain't big enough for three. You're sleeping outside tonight.
You eat my grub, you drink up my whiskey, and now you're taking my bed?
Tadlock jabbed a finger against Wilkes's chest.
You heard me, old man. Take your damn greasy blankets and go. Unless you want me to grab you by your scruffy neck and throw you out.
Damn you, Curly!
Wilkes grabbed the rifle from beside the door and swung around. Tadlock was too fast for him. He grabbed the rifle and twisted it from Wilkes's hands. He opened the door and kicked Wilkes out through it.
For that, you'll sleep outside tonight without any blankets.
Curly closed the door and set a bar in place against it.
Damn, no fool. He's lived too long.
He turned an angry gaze upon Geneva.
Did you put him up to that?
It was his own doing.
Looks like I gotta watch you every minute. I hope you're worth it.
Damn you, Curly! Let me back in! Damn it, let me in! It's my own damn place! I said, let me in!
Tadlock tried to ignore Wilkes, but finally gave in.
Damn.
Curly gathered the blankets from the old man's bed. He opened the door and threw them outside.
Take him and go sleep under the shed!
You're going to make him stay outside? This place belongs to him.
It doesn't. He found this empty dugout and just squatted here. Be thankful I didn't shoot him. I may decide to do it anyway before we leave here.
She struggled to keep some semblance of composure, but she lost control. She slumped into the chair.
I never saw a woman yet that didn't break down and cry at the least little thing.
He studied the nearly empty bottle.
Look under that bed and see if he had another.
She found another bottle and handed it to him. He opened it, letting the cork fall to the dirt floor. He dragged a chair against the door and seated himself so that she couldn't escape. He motioned toward the narrow bed.
Sit down there. I want to look at you a while.
He tipped the bottle upward and wiped his mouth again. Geneva's hope gradually began to rise. If Tadlock kept working on that bottle, he might drink himself unconscious. Then she could get away. But after a while, he set the bottle on the floor and moved toward her, arms outstretched, his eyes burning. Desperately, she attempted to duck past him, but he caught her arm and twisted her around. He pushed her backward onto the bed and fell on her with all his weight. He slapped her again, harder than the last time.
It's payday.
After a long time, she became aware of daylight showing through the cracks in the wooden door. He lay beside her, his eyes open, trying to focus on her face. He brought a rough hand up to caress her cheek.
I told you I'm a better man than Donnelly ever was.
Slowly he moved his hand down to her shoulder, then to her thigh. Turning her face away, she closed her eyes, hating him, wishing him dead. He attempted to rise, but his legs betrayed him. He sat down heavily on the edge of the bed and rubbed his forehead.
Sorriest whiskey I ever drank. It's a wonder it didn't kill Wilkes a long time ago.
He jerked a thumb toward the fireplace.
What I need is black coffee. Stir them coals and get a fire started. And fry up some of that meat. My stomach feels like there's two cats fighting in it.
He drank the first cup of coffee in several long gulps without stopping, though it was steaming hot. He wolfed down a strip of venison and demanded more. Satisfied, he appeared to be almost sober. He reached for her. She backed away, looking for something she could use to protect herself.
You can't go nowhere till I'm ready to let you. Then we'll go together.
She saw the fireplace shovel with which he had stirred the coals. Her first intention was to strike him with it. Instead, she pushed the shovel deeply into the fire, then hurled live coals and hot ash into his face. Tadlock screamed and brought his hands up to cover his eyes. Some of the coals had gone down into his long underwear and set it to smoking. Dancing wildly around the room, he bumped into the bed and then the table and almost fell into the fireplace. Howling like a wounded dog, he found the door and staggered outside.
My eyes!
Shaken, Geneva pitched the shovel away and quickly put on the tattered dress that Tadlock had thrown on the floor. She dropped a slab of bacon and a bag of coffee beans into a cloth bag. Tadlock's pistol and gun belt lay across the back of the chair. She shoved those into the sack. As an afterthought, she picked up his saddlebags. Wilkes had speculated that they contained profit from Tadlock's sales of horses. However much or little it might be, he owed her that for his brutal treatment and for killing her husband. Tadlock was at the well, his underwear smoldering. He emptied a bucket of water over his head. She hurried past him, pausing to drop Wilkes' rifle down into the water, out of reach. She ran to the pen where three horses stood waiting for feed. Hers, Tadlock's, and one she supposed belonged to the old man. Wilkes slouched out from under the shed, rubbing his eyes. He appeared to have slept in his clothes.
What's Curly hollering about? You didn't shoot him, did you?
She did not answer him.
You ought to. He'll be coming after you.
Not for a while, he won't.
She unfastened Tadlock's rifle scabbard from his saddle, carrying it and the rifle with her. She opened the gate and drove the other two horses out ahead of her. She intended to take them far enough that Tadlock would have to waste a lot of time trying to catch them on foot. She had no clear idea where she was going. Her intention at the moment was simply to put as much distance as possible between herself and Tadlock. Later, she would decide what to do. She wished now that she had killed him. Bannister was up and saddling his horse when dawn was still a distant promise. Andy couldn't see 20 feet.
Come on, we're losing daylight.
Can't even see yet. Let's make some coffee first.
I can see enough. Ain't got time to waste for coffee.
Bannister mounted and rode off as Andy and the sergeant saddled quickly.
He's riding like he knows where he's headed.
I hope when we get there that we can see the place. He talked like it'd be easy to miss.
It might be better for Mrs. Bannister if we do miss it. I don't know which man to be the most scared of. Mr. Bannister or the man that carried her off?
As light began to spread across the hills, Andy saw a scattering of bleached buffalo bones. All that remained to show for the great slaughter of a few years ago. He thought of the Indians he encountered earlier in their futile search for the sacred animal. Most of these buffalo died for their hides and nothing more, the meat left to feed wolves and other prairie scavengers. Facing starvation, the people eventually gave up the struggle for freedom and dragged themselves to the reservation. Andy could see why Bannister didn't want to risk missing the dugout in the dark. It would have been easy to miss, even in daylight, had Bannister not led the way. Andy saw a rock chimney first, its top extending only a couple of feet above a small hill into which the rude dwelling had been built. Next, he saw the brush corral.
No horses in the pen. They're already up and gone.
A black dog came from beneath a shed. A ragged old man followed warily, stopping twice to give the visitors a careful study, as if ready to turn and run. He stared at Bannister in disbelief.
Donnelly! Curly claimed he shot you dead!
Wilkes, you ought to know not to believe everything he says. How long's he been gone from here?
He ain't gone!
The old man nodded uneasily toward the cabin.
He's in yonder, raving out of his head. I think he's dying.
And my wife?
She rode off after daylight and took the horses with her. I'd be gone from here myself if she hadn't left us a foot. Curly went plumb crazy after what she done to him.
What did she do?
Throwed fire in his face. A shovel full of coal and hot ashes. Burned him awful bad.
That's just a taste of what he's got coming when the devil gets a hold of him.
He turned toward the dugout's wooden door.
Curly, drag yourself out here!
I doubt he can do that. Last time I looked in on him, he was barely able to move. He found my old six-shooter and tried aiming at me. I took it away from him.
The pistol was in Wilkes' waistband. Andy quietly relieved him of it.
Who's that?
Texas Ranger. Come out with your hands up.
I can't. You'll have to come in.
Andy shoved the door open. His jaw dropped as he saw a man lying on a crude bed, his swollen face spotted with deep and ugly pits. One eye appeared to be burned beyond healing, the other pinched almost shut. From the waist up, much of Tadlock's long underwear was gone, blackened remnants clinging to an angry mass of blistered skin. The dingy little room smelled of burned flesh.
Who are you? I can't hardly see you.
Bannister approached the bed.
I'm Donnelly Bannister. You never expected to see me again, did you?
Donnelly, but I thought...
Thought you killed me?
He grabbed Tadlock by his shoulders and shook him violently.
What did you do to Geneva?
Nothing to what she done to me. Burned me to death pretty near.
Bannister shook him again.
You tell me what you did to her. Answer me, damn you.
Andy pulled Bannister back from the edge of the bed.
Go easy. Can't tell you anything if you kill him.
I'll kill him, all right. But he's gonna talk first. Where is she, Curly?
She done this to me. Then she rode off.
Andy decided he had to take charge. He saw murder in Bannister's eyes.
Tadlock, I'm a Texas Ranger and you're under arrest.
Give me away from Donnelly. He'll kill me.
Looks to me like he's got good reason.
She didn't have no call to burn me alive. My God. Look at my eyes.
Lend me that six-shooter, Ranger. I'll finish what she started.
Andy stepped in front of Tadlock, shielding him.
Bannister, you got a good chance of coming clear for killing Cletus Slocum, but this man is helpless. Killing him would be plain murder.
Bannister stood fuming, his legs braced, his feet a little apart.
Now looks like he's near dead already. How was she, Curly? Was she worth it?
Somebody do something. I can't stand this pain.
I tried to rub hog lard on him. He screamed like a baby.
Joshua was moved by Tadlock's plight.
Maybe we can take him somewhere.
You wouldn't get 2 miles with him. He was a fire when he come running out of that dugout. He sucked in a lot of smoke and flame. I reckon they burned out his innards.
Tadlock coughed up blood. In spite of himself, Andy felt a grudging sympathy for the man. This was a hard way to meet his final reckoning.
Y'all go back outside. There's no point in tormenting this man any further.
Bannister was grim. He leaned over Tadlock and whispered something Andy couldn't hear. Andy assumed it was a curse. Then Bannister walked out with Joshua and Wilkes. Andy stood at Tadlock's bedside, staring at the mined face, the blistered body. If this had been a wounded animal, he would not have hesitated. But a man, even a wretch like Tadlock... Andy removed all but one cartridge from Wilkes's pistol and laid the weapon near Tadlock's head.
There's just one bullet. Don't waste it.
Outside, Andy found Bannister digging a grave.
I wouldn't have expected this of you.
I want the pleasure of dropping him in the hole and throwing dirt on his face. What the hell did you do?
I gave him a choice.
They wrapped Tadlock in his blankets and lowered him into the grave.
I don't know much about praying. Anybody want to say something?
Joshua waited for someone to speak. When no one did, he removed his hat and bowed his head.
Lord, there ain't none of us can say we ain't sinned in your sight. So it ain't our place to speak bad about this man. Whatever wrongs he's done, they're over with now. I hope you can see your way clear to forgive him. And I wish everybody here would, too.
Joshua glanced at Bannister.
The grave makes everybody equal. Saint and sinner, black man and white. Praise the Lord. Amen.
Heard some high-paid preachers, but I never heard a prayer said better.
I've talked to the Lord a right smart lately, since I killed Mr. Burnsides.
Does he ever answer you?
Every time.
They traveled until nearly dark before making camp. Andy arose at daybreak. He was dismayed to find that Bannister had slipped away sometime in the night, taking Andy's pistol. Joshua gazed with worried eyes at Bannister's tracks.
I'm afraid he figures to find her before we do. You reckon he's still got notions about doing her harm?
It's hard to say what's in a man's mind when he's been through as much as Bannister has. We'd better saddle up and go.
In their haste, they skipped breakfast. After a couple of miles, Geneva quit driving the horses that belonged to Tadlock and Wilkes. They followed her 100 yards, then stopped to graze. She looked back, half expecting to see Tadlock trailing her, but knowing he couldn't catch her on foot. She wondered how badly he was burned. Not badly enough to pay for the shame and humiliation he had visited upon her, she thought. She shuddered, remembering the animal violence. As if through her he was taking out all his angers and pent-up hatreds. She still felt the hurt, the nausea, the loathing. Despite her eagerness to get far away, she considered waiting in ambush and killing him with his own pistol when he came for his horse. The weapon was still in the sack she'd brought from the dugout. She discarded the idea, knowing that to see him would probably set her to shaking so badly she couldn't hold him in the sights. She looked about, trying to find her bearings. The rolling plains stretched in all directions as far as she could see, a choppy land of sand and grass, mesquite and scrub oak. Somewhere to the west lay the rugged breaks that marked the eastern edge of the higher and even more extensive staked plains, until recently the domain of Comanche and Kiowa. Surely somewhere in the midst of this far-reaching prairie must be a town where she could buy supplies and new clothing to replace the tattered and torn remnants that barely covered her. She would need money, and she had none of her own. Geneva had not yet looked in Tadlock's saddlebags. She unbuckled one side and lifted the broad flap. Wilkes had been right. There was money, perhaps several $100. She felt a momentary lift, tempered only a little by the knowledge that Tadlock gained it by stealing and selling other people's property. At least now it was in needier hands than his. When she found a town, perhaps she could buy a buggy. Her body was sore from the unaccustomed horseback travel, as well as from Tadlock's harsh treatment. But money was useless unless she could find a place to spend it. She had been seeing cattle. Where there were cattle, there must be a ranch with people. And she began to feel thirsty. It stood to reason that if she followed a cattle trail, it should lead to water. She chose one that appeared to have been heavily used. She gambled that the southward direction would lead her toward water rather than away from it. She hoped that cattle moving along the trail after her would eliminate her tracks and thwart any effort by Tadlock to follow her. She came eventually to a stream angling southeastward, as they tended to do in this part of the country. It might be a tributary to the Brazos, she thought, or one of the other major rivers that angled across Texas on their long course toward the Gulf of Mexico. At this moment, it didn't matter which river. Several cows loafed on the bank, having drunk their fill and now placidly chewing their cuds. A couple of cows rose to their feet in alarm and trotted away. The rest watched her with suspicion, but chose comfort over flight. She moved upstream from them and dismounted. Her horse dropped its head and began to drink. She lay on her stomach and cupped her hand in the water, sipping eagerly. Her thirst satisfied, she considered how comforting a bath might feel. Her hands and arms were grimy from 2 days of travel and dust and sweat. She was eager also to rid herself of whatever physical stain Tadlock left with her. She feared the emotional stain would remain a long time. After unsaddling and staking the horse to graze, she removed the badly torn dress and her underclothing, then waded into the water. It was pleasantly cool, but not cold. She scrubbed the garments as best she could without soap, then carried them out and spread them across a clump of brush. She re-entered the stream and soaked in leisure while her clothing dried in the sun. The water relaxed her. She felt that along with the sweat and grime, it carried away whatever remained of the long night with Tadlock. Dressed, she built a small fire. She realized that she left the dugout too hastily. She had grabbed what little food appeared handy, but she had no knife to slice the bacon, nor a pot or can for boiling coffee. She decided to ride farther in hope of finding a house or a cow camp. Her horse, picketed on the stream bank, jerked its head around and poked its ears forward. A horseman was coming in her direction. For a panicked moment, she thought of Tadlock. Reason quickly told her it was unlikely that he was this close behind her. A small man, not much over 5 feet tall, rode up.
Howdy, ma'am.
She was conscious that her remnant of a dress gave her only partial cover. The torn skirt revealed one leg up past the knee. Hunching, she tried to cover both the leg and her bare shoulder.
What do you want?
The rider was quick to recognize her embarrassment. He discreetly looked away.
Didn't mean to take you by surprise. Looks like your horse might have throwed you off and dragged you. Maybe this'll make you feel more at ease.
He untied a yellow slicker from behind the cantle of his saddle and handed it down to her, turning his head while she put it on.
Thank you. I'm sorry you had to see me in this condition.
I didn't see a thing. I don't need the slicker right now, no way. It don't look much like rain.
She guessed him to be in his 40s, thin, wiry, his hair partly gray and in need of cutting. His whiskers had not felt a razor in a while. He was a long way from handsome, but his eyes were kindly.
By the looks of things, you've been through a right smart of trouble. Is there any way I can help you?
You could tell me how to reach a town. Any town.
There's one in every direction, but none you could get to between now and night. It ain't far to our house, though. I'd be glad to take you there.
Our house? Who else besides you? A wife?
No, ma'am. Just me and my brother, Jock. Neither one of us has ever found a woman willing to put up with two old Scotchmen.
He seemed to sense what troubled her.
You don't need to fret about us doing you harm. We're just a couple of stove-up cowpunchers. Been years since we done any carousing and carrying on. McPherson's my name. Scotty McPherson.
Geneva began to ease. Instinct told her this little man was just what he said he was.
Oh, I hope you'll pardon me if I seemed rude, Mr. McPherson. You're right, I've been through so much the last couple of days that I don't know up from down.
You'll feel better when you've had a good supper. I'll saddle your horse for you while you gather up your possibles. I don't believe I heard your name.
It's Geneva Bannister. Mrs. Bannister.